Hello and welcome to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks Sports Day at 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you as we are every week. And the show is emanating this week from the Doug Mitchell Thunderbird Sports Center at the University of British Columbia. We're recording this on Saturday just before noon, Randeep, and the Canucks are taking to the ice here for practice. So we're watching on from high up at the top of the bowl here at UBC. Hopefully they can't hear us too clearly as we do the show here from UBC. The day after the final preseason game for the Vancouver Canucks, a 4-1 win over the Edmonton Oilers, and there were plenty of storylines coming out of that game. There's some decisions for the organization to make over the next couple of days. What stood out to you coming out of the game on Friday night?
Yeah, it was the full dress rehearsal as we were building it as, and maybe a couple of changes last minute that I didn't expect, Connor Garland not playing in the game. But when we start talking about, you know, what we saw in that game, I think the story of the game and much of this discussion post-game was Arshdeep Bence. This is a kid that started off the season really having to be, you know, improve a couple of things. He got 8 games last year, but the question was, how much could he improve in the offseason? How much could he work on? Could he put on some weight? Could he be a little bit more confident with the puck, be more decisive, as Rick Tocchet said? And in that game against the Edmonton Oilers, was a standout player for a number of reasons. Not only the goal he scored, but his all-around puck play, engaging in battles, winning battles. So for me, when we talk about individuals really staking a claim to a roster spot, I think Arshdeep Bence did a great job of putting his name in there. Now the question is, what will the cap look like and what kind of impact will that have on him making the team or some of his teammates?
Yeah, I agree. I thought Bence had a really good game on Friday, and I think he's kind of put himself at the top of the list above the guy that we spent most of last week's show, Atu Ratu, or spent most of last week's show talking about in Atu Ratu in terms of, you know, a guy that now, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say front runner, because I think a lot of these decisions are going to come down to things like the cap and potentially whether they go into LTIR or not. So that's going to be an interesting thing to factor in. You know, Pugh Suter's been banged up, but he's out here on the ice for practice wearing a non-contact jersey. So does he trend in the right direction in time to play on Wednesday in the opener? That's going to be a question because, you know, I don't want to get too much into like the nitty-gritty of the cap, but if the Canucks want to operate outside LTIR, they only have room for 12 forwards on the roster, and one of those forwards has to be Pugh Suter. We're not including the injured guys in this, so not including Dakota Joshua. And in that conversation, if Pugh Suter comes back into the lineup, then there's one spot for one of Oman, Ratu, or Bence. And because Oman needs to go through waivers, that could be a situation where, even though Ratu's had a good preseason, although I think, you know, his stock dropped a little bit after the game on Friday against Edmonton, you know, regardless of the fact that Bence has played really well and the coach is clearly intrigued with him, it might just be a numbers game and he might fall victim to that. But that doesn't mean he won't be back soon. And also, there is a very real chance that with some of the injuries they've had, we mentioned Suter out here in a non-contact jersey today, Kito Hirose banged up with the concussion, there's a real possibility that they have to go into LTIR. And if they do that, then they've got a lot more flexibility in terms of who they keep.
Then it opens up. But, you know, I think from a merit-based conversation, let's take the cap implications out of it for now. Arshdeep Bence has shown that he's taken a step this year. And from a coaching perspective, there's two things. Yes, this decision makes it tough because you already have Phil DiGiuseppe, who was sent down to the minors. That was a tough decision for Rick Tocchet. If Bence is required to be sent down, that's going to be a tough decision, but that's a great situation to be in if you're Rick Tocchet. All of a sudden, you've got two or three players that you might have to send down that may actually warrant a position on this team. That means you're dealing with a bit of a surplus, which is an excellent scenario to be in if you're a coach in the NHL. It means you have options in the AHL that you're confident with. And with Bence, there's one thing that I like particularly about his game. There's the ask by Rick Tocchet to his entire roster to say, hey, I want you to be wall and inside guys. And early on in this preseason, until the end, he's shown that he's not shying away from contact. Even in that last game against Stuart Skinner and Troy Stetcher, who's battling in front of the net, knocks Skinner off his balance a little bit. Didn't get penalized for it, but that's going to score points with the coaching staff to say, wait a second, he got there. And they go back the other way, and Corey Perry tries to do the same thing to Artur Shilov. That's engaging in battle. So whether it's Phil DiGiuseppe, Arshdeep Bance, I think Ratu's got a little bit to go still. There was obviously that mistake in coverage on the Evan Bouchard goal.
Yeah.
He drifts left, keeps the center of the ice wide open, leads to a goal. But as a 21-year-old, you're okay with that. Nobody's implying that he's going to be a perfect player at this age. But I do feel like, you know, based on merit, there's probably a couple of names. And Niels Omon's the intriguing one because, yes, you're right. You don't want to lose him on waivers. He's a center. He's a big body, 6'4".
Penalty killer.
Penalty killer. And generally when he's on the ice, you're not losing much. Sure, he might not give you much offense, but at the same time, defensively, he's solid. So there's value in that, too, especially for this coach.
And I thought Omon, as much as we've talked about Baines, and you know, we'll get back to talking about him because I think he had a really strong showing on Friday night. I thought Omon played his best game of the preseason, too. And again, it's not going to be as flashy, like he wasn't out there on the power play to score the goal that Baines did. But I thought he quietly had a pretty solid game down the lineup. And Rick Tocchet has a history with him. He was willing to put him into playoff games last year. There's a level of trust there. I think all those things could play a factor. The other name that you mentioned is Phil DiGiuseppe. And you kind of think, oh, out of sight, out of mind, because he's gone through waivers and been assigned to Abbotsford. But if they do want to operate without going into LTIR, his cap hit is an interesting part of this too, because he would allow them to accrue more cap space than some of these other guys. And once you clear waivers, you can go up and down freely for 30 days. So I know that that would mean that they would have to waive Omon in that scenario, but I wouldn't rule DiGiuseppe out as a guy that could very well be on the NHL roster. The Canucks have to submit that roster at 2 o'clock Pacific time Monday afternoon.
And the DiGiuseppe situation reminds me of the Niels Omon situation from last year.
Yeah.
I remember being at this very campus last year after the Canucks made cuts and Niels Omon was sent down, and you could tell Rick Tocchet didn't want that. He understood the cap implications, but he said, hey, I feel bad for the kid. Very similar to what we were talking about with PDG. And so just because the roster set a certain way on Monday doesn't necessarily mean Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's going to remain the same. We'll have to wait and see, but it's also, you know, cap compliability, right? You know, are you in a situation where you are able to meet the demands for Monday and the opening night roster? It might be different from game two, game three. It could look pretty different depending on what the Canucks need. So something, you know, to keep in mind. Opening night, we make a big deal out of it because it's the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with any player, you want to have the confidence of the coach for game one, especially if you're a guy from the AHL. But game three, we could be talking about pretty significant movement further down the lineup or in the back end.
Well, and that is the thing is – you know, I know Thomas Drantz was reporting in the last couple of days on these airwaves that the organization seems to be coming to the realization that they might have to start the season in LTIR just because of some of the injuries they're dealing with. And there's still time. There's a couple of days. We know it's Trader Jim and Trader Pat, so those guys could find a way to make a move and change
the calculus. They
traded
for Lafferty last year, right before the season.
Yeah, exactly. Year before, they traded for Riley Stillman, I think, right before the season, too. So, you know, it's not just the guys that they currently have in camp. But if you don't operate in LTIR, as I said, you're probably only carrying 12 forwards, healthy forwards on the roster. And looking beyond Wednesday's opener, you play Wednesday at home against Calgary, Friday at home against Philly, and then you go on a four-game road trip as far east as you can go pretty well, or as far south anyway. You're going to Tampa and Florida and Philly and then hitting Chicago on the way back. I don't know many teams, if any, that would want to only take 12 healthy forwards on a long road trip like that, because if somebody goes down in warm-up in Tampa Bay, you can't get a body from Abbotsford or wherever. I think the Abbotsford Canucks go on a road trip to Colorado that same week. So you can't get a body from Colorado to Tampa in time for a game in the evening. If someone goes down in morning skate or in warm-up, then you're totally hooped. So I would imagine they'd like to have at least one extra forward and one extra defenseman, and it looks like at this point that will require them to start the season in LTIR.
The big question is, though, Pugh Suter, right, where he's wearing the red non-contact jersey. We'll see over the next couple of days on how that situation changes, if it does. Now, if it doesn't, then we're in a situation where, yeah, you're probably dealing in LTIR, and it's not an ideal circumstance because you want to accrue cap space so you can use a little bit later on. But the fact of the matter is, this is a situation that you have to deal with. You can't predict these things, and we'll see. We'll see in a couple of days pretty quick.
So getting back to Arshdeep Bains, who had the strong performance on Friday night, and the thing people are going to want to talk about is the goal on the power play, which obviously he's in the right place, the right time, has a good finish. He's done that a couple of times, and he was given that opportunity because of the fact that Connor Garland wasn't able to play on Friday after tweaking something in the morning skate. Rick Tocchet kind of downplayed it, said it wasn't a big deal. But for me, what stood out for Arshdeep Bains was not the goal itself, although it was a nice finish. He was in the right spot. He buried it against Stuart Skinner, who's a goalie that went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. All of those things are great. But it was the work put in on that shift by Bains prior to the goal that really stood out. And that's the kind of thing you're talking about, you know, getting to the middle of the ice, getting to the inside, winning battles along the walls. Those are the things that are going to endear him to Rick Tocchet and endear him to the coaching staff. And, you know, I think we also need to remember when talking about the roster that ultimately it's management that decides who's on the roster, and then it's Rick Tocchet's job as the coach to deploy those guys. But it'll probably help your case if Rick Tocchet's banging the table for you in a meeting. And I would imagine that when he sees plays like what Arshdeep Bains was able to do on that sequence in particular on Friday night, he'll be banging the table.
For sure. And that's a play because there's layers to that play. It's not simply just scoring a goal, Batch. It's, you know, along the right wall, are you able to, you know, engage in a battle? Remember, this was a PK by the Edmonton Oilers that was being aggressive in that moment. In the playoffs, we saw that power play maybe kind of buckle in those moments, but there, along that right-hand side, in that battle, he stands, you know, he's heavy on his skates. It's not like he's going down easy. He's not getting tossed around. And that is something that I think was important on that play. Even before that, the goal that was scored by Quinn Hughes, Edmonton loses the puck at the blue line, and there's a decisive play. There's a decisive act there by Arshdeep Bains to set up, I believe it was Niels Omon or Teddy Bluger on that play, streaking down the middle. And that doesn't come off, but then the play continues, and it's just quicker decision-making. So you've got a mix of a couple of things here. A, the finishing, when you score goals in two straight games on the power play, when power play one isn't finding their groove yet, that's going to score points. When you're heavy on your skates and you're strong on the puck, that's going to score points. But also, Rick Tocchet mentioned this year, one thing he had to improve, Bants did, was make quicker decisions. And he's done that, which is, if you can play that direct game, a little bit more north-south, add in some skill, you're going to score some points with the coach.
Yeah, and, you know, all of this to say, I think, if this was a pure meritocracy, Arshdeep Bains is on the opening night roster. You could even make a case for Atu Ratu in spite of that, you know, noticeable breakdown in coverage on the Bouchard goal that we alluded to earlier. And, you know, I guess what I'm trying to do here is set people's expectations at a certain level, because if you are a huge Arshdeep Bains fan and you're so excited because you think he's for sure going to be on the opening night roster, not that I want to rain on your parade, but there's a lot more factors that go into this. We detailed them a lot on last week's show when talking about Ratu as well. So the same goes for if you're an Atu Ratu fan or, you know, I haven't heard many vocal Niels Omon fans out there, but I'm sure there are a few of them who would like to see him on the roster. Rick Tocchet might be one of them.
Somewhere out there, there's somebody yelling Tobias Funke style. There's dozens of us. You're an Arrested Development fan.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, all of this to say that, you know, these guys have played great. They put themselves in the conversation, but ultimately factors outside of their control could work against them to start the year anyway.
That being said, it's a great story, which
yes,
also sets you up in the long term, because early on, and they haven't played regular season games, there's always peaks and valleys in a season, Batch. But, you know, talking to Arsh like you have and I have, you can see he's very determined on, I know what I need to do. I have a conversation with the coaches, and they're putting me in positions to succeed, and I got to keep on working. Like, it's a very...
He's very grounded for a kid of his age and his experience level in pro hockey. And it speaks to why a couple of years ago, even when he was only a year in the organization playing pro hockey, they brought him back to the summer development camp to speak to the guys they'd just drafted. And he, in some cases, was only 2 or maybe 3 years older than the guys that he's speaking to because of the fact that it's clear he gets it, and it's part of the reason why, on top of his strong play, his stock has really risen within the organization.
Yeah, the kid's got a different mentality, and I'll add another layer to that, too. Playing in your hometown, getting the attention he did last year, that can be tough for a lot of people, too.
It can go two ways.
For sure. It can make you somewhat comfortable and be like, hey, I made it. But no, he played 8 games last year. I wasn't able to put any points, and there's a growing pain. You know, there's a lot of growing pains, right? You could see in certain games, I would focus on the LA and Vegas games that he played.
Yeah.
You know, against Gavrikov, against, you know, rough-and-tumble defensemen like, you know, Zach Whitecloud. You could see it was a bit of a tough sliding for him. But I noticed in Penticton as well, when he went in a battle against Vincent Desharnais in day one, he got tossed around a little bit. Day two, in open ice, he just absolutely just took Vincent Desharnais to school. He was putting high skill moves up, and he was engaged in battle. So even that turnaround time of, all right, if this is the standard, I'm going to meet it. We'll see what it means for him making the NHL on opening night roster, if it happens, if it's not. But I think overall for the team, you know, this is a kid you've thrown a fair bit at the last little bit, and he's responded, which is, remember, undrafted, free agent signing. There were 20 teams that were interested in signing him when he was a free agent, and he came to Vancouver because he liked the message and it was his hometown team. And for it hasn't hit fully yet. It's not like he's a Brandon Hagel, right? Like, yeah. If that's the comparison we're making, because they also played the same junior team. But so far, steps in the right direction and showing something this preseason.
And before we move on from talking about Arsh, I want to ask you this question because, of course, you have this unique perspective compared to me, of course, on this show. When he played his first game last year, he became the 4th player of Punjabi heritage mm-hmm. to feature in the NHL game. What would it mean, not just to him and his family, but the community, if he breaks camp on the opening night roster of the Vancouver Canucks?
It would be massive because, you know, last year you can say injuries and there's a way, and he played great last year. He was an AHL All-Star, the All-Star Game MVP, but to make this camp when I think there was an assumption that he would go back to Abbotsford and you got to work your way up and at some point you'll get a chance in the season. This would be a huge achievement for him to say, hey, actually, those expectations of that might be out there for me. I have my own and I'm listening to the team and the following the program. So I think for the community, it would be big. For his family, his dad was in Penticton watching training camp. Is kind of sitting in the corner of the rink, just kind of as a proud dad, but also very, you know, just watching it in a different way. I had a chance to chat with him and said, hey, he's got to work hard, listen to the coaches, and if he does his job, everything will take care of itself. So for that family, not being a hockey family, you know, before Arsh, that's got to mean something. So the fact that he made the NHL to begin with is one thing. He makes the opening night roster in his hometown. I think it'll be a special moment for not only him, but also the community.
So again, we will find out the fate of not just Arshdeep Bains, but Atu Ratu, Niels Omon, and the rest of the Canucks roster when they have to submit it. Again, the deadline, 2 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, and keep it locked here on Sportsnet 650 for all the latest in terms of the Canucks opening night roster and everything Canucks leading up to the season opener on Wednesday. Getting back to the preseason finale on Friday night, though, let's talk about some other guys that stood out. And I want to start with Kiefer Sherwood, who I think it's becoming very evident that he's probably going to be a fan favorite for this team. And it's for the same reason that Quinn Hughes talked about hating playing against him in that Nashville series last year. And we saw it with him getting under the skin of Darnell Nurse on Friday night. This is a guy that really thrives on being hard to play against, getting under the skin of his opponents. And it wouldn't surprise me at all, even though it looks like he's going to start on the third or probably the fourth line, if this is a guy that gets elevated up the lineup. Rick Tocchet spoke on Friday about how he was playing so well, he needs to find a way to get him some more ice time. So a good start for Kiefer Sherwood ahead of the regular season opener on Wednesday.
Oh, he's totally that player that would annoy the heck out of you on the ice, right? We saw that against Darnell Nurse where, you know, Sherwood is hitting everything in sight and Nurse goes out of his way, takes a penalty against Sherwood. That's what you want if you're a Canucks fan. This is a guy that's going to throw the body, he's going to be annoying, and he's going to smile and chirp you after. And I remember in that game, there was a play where Darnell Nurse iced the puck because Sherwood was pressuring him. Sherwood skated by and made sure that said, yeah, you felt the heat. You could see some words being exchanged, and it wasn't exactly pleasant from Darnell Nurse's perspective. That's the type of player you want from an attitude perspective. Now, from a style perspective, he caused 2 to 3 icings himself just with puck pressure, which is, late in the season, in the playoffs, those whistles, you know, that icing when a team's tired and they're forced to make a bad decision, that can cost you, you know, that can win you games. That can win you, you know, get you back in a game or give you a game-winning goal. So little things like that, I love the pressure that he brings. And, Batch, you mentioned moving up the lineup. He could have a very Connor Garland-like impact in the sense that...
That's a great person to compare him to.
Absolutely. Where, you know, Rick Tocchet, anytime he wants to wake up a line or he wants to wake up a player, Connor Garland's the first guy he'll throw up and kind of move around the lineup. I think Sherwood, in a different way, just to say, all right, we need something. We need some physicality here. We need some forecheck. We need something. And Sherwood could be that player that is used in the same way.
Yeah, I thought he was great. And he's one of those players that it's easy to see why Rick Tocchet's going to love this guy. And so he's going to be given lots of opportunity. Also wanted to talk about Elias Pettersson because, of course, the microscope has been on him through the preseason because of the struggles late last year. And, you know, I heard Sat talking on the postgame show last night about, like, people are trying to read way too much, both positively or negatively, into his performance. But I do think it's also worth noting that it was his best game of the preseason, and we saw him and DeBrusque combine to set up Soucy on the nice goal that he scored in the slot. You know, we won't really know until the games start for real on Wednesday, and we can really sort of focus in on how Pettersson bounces back from that disappointment last year. But I'm more optimistic coming out of the game Friday than I was going into it.
Yeah, that was by far his best game. And what I really liked about Elias Pettersson's game was his neutral zone play. This is, you know, a player that was attacking. He was skating in the neutral zone. And there's one play that was in the first period. It was after the 1-0 goal where the puck ricochets off the official and Petey doesn't delay whatsoever. He's on it. There's no hesitation. It doesn't throw him off, and he attacks. And Daniel Sprong's going down the middle to have a chance through a middle drive there, which was saying, okay, these guys, there's some chemistry there, and Petey is feeling it. He's got the dangles. He's skating. Even scanning in the neutral zone on the defensive side, coming back, he was skating hard. And what I liked about his game overall and Sprong was Sprong has the green light anytime Petey has the puck in the neutral zone. There was a couple of plays, and one was an icing where you could see they're on the same wavelength. And I don't know if this has been brought up in meetings. I don't know if this is Rick Tocchet or Elias Pettersson saying, hey, when I have the puck and I'm looking up, you go. I'm going to try to hit you in stride. There's, you know, Daniel Sprong is a player that is very tough to handle when he's going full speed attacking. And that was just one of the things you could see that Pettersson was confident. He was skating and he was distributing, which is a good sign if you're Jake DeBrusque or Daniel Sprong, or in this case, Carson Soucy, who beat, you know, the Oilers' weak side, basically, an excellent pass by Petey. So I'm never one to really jump on the sky is falling aspect, but I understand that element is in Vancouver when it comes to Elias Pettersson. But that was he's ready for the regular season. Let's go. Let's get this thing started.
And you bring up Daniel Sprong. I think he's another guy worth mentioning before we step aside for a break. I thought he was pretty good. I noticed him on the forecheck at times. You talk about the play where he drives the middle and Pettersson finds him for the tip on net. But when Rick Tocchet was asked about him post-game, he focused more on some lapses in coverage in the defensive zone and said, I think he's getting lost in his own zone a bit. And he's like, but we understood that was going to be part of his game and we're going to work on it with him. But it kind of reminded me of the game last year where Pettersson scored a hat trick and Tocchet was like, yeah, but he turned the puck over. So, you know, offensive prowess is not necessarily going to impress this head coach. And if Sprong wants to continue to have opportunity on that line, much like I've talked about this with all sorts of players in Canucks history, and the most recent one is Andrei Kuzmenko, either you've got to produce so much that your coach has to overlook your defensive lapses, or you've got to become the player that Rick Tocchet needs you to be at both ends of the ice. And I think that's the conversation we'll get into with Daniel Sprong as we get into the season.
We focus on, you know, the two extremes. Either you're really good offensively or not good defensively, or, hey, there's a complete turnaround and you become really good defensively. The reality is this conversation, Batch, is probably going to land somewhere in the middle where Daniel Sprong maybe makes some improvements to his game and he knows when to be aggressive. He knows, you know, has good reads in the defensive zone. Or there's going to be moments he's going to have lapses. But here's the key. We talked about Sherwood moving up the lineup in certain cases. I could see Kiefer Sherwood, if the Canucks have a one-goal lead or a two-goal lead, and Rick Tocchet wants to lock it down with a player that he trusts, I could see Kiefer Sherwood going alongside Elias Pettersson, Jake DeBrusque, to play a more defensive style of hockey. If you're chasing goals, Daniel Sprong could be that guy that is, you know, on the ice, a la Andrei Kuzmenko a couple of years ago, where you need that offense. So that's where it's going to be the discussion of the season, but it is something that I think is going to take a while to get there because there is some work required there. And the coach nailed it where, yeah, of course, it wasn't a perfect game, especially in his own zone, but you see the promise offensively. You see, you know, the broad shoulders. You see the speed going through the neutral zone. He's not an easy guy to knock the puck off of, especially when he's going in with speed.
This is In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you recording the show today while watching Canucks practice at UBC. We'll be back and get into the mailbag in a moment right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. If you're listening on the radio and you've missed any part of the show, you're in luck because it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to that. We're getting into the regular season now as of Wednesday, so you get every show with Sat and Dan Monday through Friday, and you also get every Canucks post-game show as part of that feed, and you get In the Booth too. So make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a minute of all of the great Canucks coverage on Sportsnet 650. All right, Randeep, let's get into the mailbag as we sent a call out for questions on Twitter. And you, the listener, have answered us. By the way, you can send us questions throughout the week anytime, and we'll save them and try to answer them on the following week's edition of In the Booth. So again, at Batch Hockey, at Randeep Janda on Twitter. The first question comes from Adrian, who writes in and says, when Demko is fit, do you think they will run with three goalies, risk losing Lankanen on waivers, or send Artie down? And this is something that's going to be more of a long-term question, and we don't know how long-term because we don't know the timeline for Thatcher Demko, but it's an interesting one, and I don't really know the answer to this one at this point.
Yeah, part of this is also going to be play, right? Based on how does Artur Shelov look in the final preseason game? He looked fantastic,
yeah.
And if he keeps that level of play up, then you have to, you know, see what Lankanen does. And is that a waivers? Is there a goalie market on the trade market? Like, there, you have to consider a couple of different things. Now, if there's any concerns about or anything that Shelov needs to work on, and you feel like the AHL would be a better time for him to just do a lot of heavy lifting, and he can work there with Justin Poggi, maybe that's an opportunity that you take. But, Batch, that seems so far away at this point based on the big million-dollar question in Vancouver. What's Thatcher Demko's status? So if and when that fitness happens, I think we can discuss that. But as of right now, the fact that that is a question later on and a tough one at that tells you that you're in a decent goaltending situation right now.
And this is a question that goes beyond, you know, which two guys deserve to be in the NHL level or who's playing well. This is a conversation about organizational goaltending depth,
mm-hmm.
too, because they lost Yuri Patera on waivers.
Yep.
So they may have to make a move to shore up their goaltending in Abbotsford in the short term, because right now we're looking at Nikita Tolopilo, who's relatively young, and Ty Young, who has no pro hockey experience.
Lemieux, who played in the ECHL last year, you will probably want to get him a taste at the HL level a little bit.
Yeah, so those are the three guys in the mix, but right now you don't have an ECHL backup under contract. Now, if the Bruins sign Jeremy Swayman, put Patera on waivers, and the Canucks are the only team that claims him, they can send him straight to Abbotsford at that point, and that might ultimately be what happens, is Yuri Patera has to pack his bags from out in Boston and come all the way back to the West Coast again after being claimed by the Bruins this past week. But if that doesn't happen, then I don't think they'd want to risk losing Lankanen on waivers,
no.
And that could be part of where, even if Artur Shelov has played well, they might look to send him down to get him some games in Abbotsford at the very least, especially if Demko's back and he's going to go on a run. Or they might seriously look at carrying three goaltenders on their NHL roster.
Part of this will also be Lankanen's play, right? Like, if he is playing really, really well, that's the decision right there, where you've got the control with Artur Shelov and you essentially say, hey, Artie, you're the goalie guy in the future. You're going to be our backup in the future. You feature, but we've got a situation where you're needed in the AHL, and Kevin Lankanen's playing well. But if we get to that point, we'll wait and see. Remember, Lankanen's on a one-year deal. So you have this year to make that decision. But you're right. With Yuri Patera not in the fold anymore, it does free up one spot. Maybe that's Patera's. Maybe that's Shelov's down the road. The only thing that's going to tell us that is Thatcher Demko and his status. Now, if he's not ready in the next little bit, she loves his Nita at the NHL level. You can still get Patera back, but the fact of the matter is Demko is the big, you know, million-dollar question, elephant in the room, whatever, you know, phrase you want to use. And nobody outside of the organization and really knows anything about that situation. It's the best-kept secret in a lot of ways. And to be fair to the organization, they might not even know too much about it given the rareness of that condition.
Yeah, so we'll track that going forward. Spencer has a question that kind of follows up on this topic. He asks, does Demko have any trade value? Which is not a question I really want to discuss because I don't think it's realistic for this team to look at trading Demko. But the short answer to this is yes. Regardless of the fact that he's got this knee injury he's battling through right now, this is a guy that was the runner-up for the Vezina last year. Of course, there is a team out there that would take a flyer on him should the Canucks be looking to move on from him. But let me tell you this right now, and I'm saying this with 100% confidence, the Canucks are not going to trade Thatcher Demko. They are not considering it right now.
Look at the ceiling of this team, and how much higher is it with Thatcher Demko? A lot higher. You know, I've been listening to a lot of media over the last couple of days, and an old, you know, friend of Sportsnet and still jumps on the Kipper and Bourne show, Dougie McLean, saying, hey, if they have Thatcher Demko, they're the best in the Pacific, and they're a Stanley Cup contender. Like, that's the ceiling with this team when you're talking about having that goaltender compared to anybody else. And that's not a disrespect to the two guys they have right now, but your ceiling goes that much higher. Now, if Artur Shelov's in a year's time can show that, okay, wait a second, he is something special and you have to keep an eye on him, you further that conversation maybe down the road, I don't know.
That's not a short-term conversation at all.
It's not a short-term. Long-term, maybe. Short-term, not at all, because we're talking about a guy that came in second in Vezina voting, and if he's right, he is one of the best three goaltenders in the NHL. Those guys don't grow on trees. We know that here in Vancouver, outside of Luongo, really, you know, and being at his peak in the city, it's been tough to find any Vezina candidate goaltender. And, you know, Kirk McLean was in the running for a couple of years as well. He got some votes. But that's really it, Batch. We haven't really had many other goaltenders in that conversation in the city. So be careful. Be careful. When you got these guys, you just don't give them up.
Yeah, absolutely. Tatiana writes in, and this is something we kind of talked about earlier, but we'll touch on it again. She says, with Tockett saying he could have played Sherwood more in the game on Friday because he liked his game so much, is he a contender for a top six spot? And would he work better on the Miller or Pedersen line? I'm going to say, because of the fact that he's a right-handed shot, I would say he works better on the Pedersen line just because that's the obvious fit. DeBrusk plays the left. Pedersen's down the middle. Sherwood would be on the right-hand side, and they've tried him there in the preseason. But with the style of game he plays, I would think he stylistically might be a better fit for the line with Miller and Besser. He'd just have to play his off wing. So that's an interesting one. It wouldn't surprise me if we see him put in both of those spots throughout the year, or definitely moved up the lineup if they have any injuries on the wing in the top six, but he's absolutely a top six candidate at some point this year for me, for sure.
And that's really credit to the player, because he can, you know, as a guy that's generally lived in the bottom of the lineup and in the fourth line or the third line, you have to really mold your ability to who you're playing with. And I like the fit next to Pedersen based on a couple of things. You're right, the style of play with Miller makes sense, but based on what we know about the situation of this Daniel Sprong, and, you know, can you trust him defensively, can you not, is going to be a moving target all season long. I think there's an automatic place for him, and you need somebody who can really be that player that is so aggressive on the forecheck. For me, that line still needs that. And I know Jake DeBrusk can play that game, but I think, like, having a bulldozer, a battering ram type of a player would still benefit that line to say, hey, you're able to get the puck, and then Jake DeBrusk and Elias Pettersson are able to get to work on the cycle, and then you chip in. I like that fit. So to me, I would go with the Kiefer Sherwood on the Pedersen line.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think that's where he's most likely to get the most opportunity. Princess Erica 84 on Twitter writes in and asks, what do you think of the chemistry brewing between Pedersen and DeBrusk so far? I really like what I've seen, and hopefully it's not just me. And I think anybody that saw that goal that Carson Soucy scored last night has to be excited about the possibilities and the potential for Jake DeBrusque and Elias Pettersson playing together.
Yeah, it was so subtle as well, right, where you're seeing the pass by Pettersson. But before that, the way that they just kind of manipulate space in that corner and draw Edmonton in to say, hey, I'm going to shield the puck. All right, Petey, it's yours. And the way that Leon Draisaitl, with those two skilled players, has to just creep a little bit closer to the right-hand side. And these weak side attacks that the Canucks are showing in preseason, there is something there. We've seen it on that Pettersson play. But I love the way that that chemistry of that duo just showed in that moment where it leads to a goal. But in that moment, you're kind of seeing the players float off to that side. And that's because they respect DeBrusque and Pettersson's play. So I loved it. I think, the sample size obviously isn't that large yet. Let it play out a little bit more, full intensity, where these players are a little bit more into it. They're moving their feet probably a little bit more. I thought Vancouver's effort was solid, but remember, the regular season is another gear. So far, so good. And you've got two players that are supremely skilled. DeBrusque can score multiple ways. And that's what excites me about his game, where he's not simply a one-shot scorer. He's going to get into, in front of the blue paint. He's going to be greasy. He's going to tip in pucks. And with Pettersson, if you got your stick on the ice and you're able to finish, he's going to get you the puck.
Absolutely he is. And I think we also have to mention DeBrusque on the first power play unit. Obviously, they haven't necessarily looked in mid-season form yet, and that's to be expected. They only got the one game all playing together, but DeBrusque did have a shooting chance in that bumper spot where they set him up, and JT Miller spoke openly on Friday about how excited he is to have a left-hand shot that could shoot the puck like DeBrusque back in that spot. And he specifically name-checked Bo Horvat and said it'll be like getting back to the success we had when Bo was here on that power play. So DeBrusque has a big opportunity here playing with Pettersson, building that chemistry at even strength, and then trying to build some chemistry with the guys on the first power play unit, and maybe most importantly, JT Miller, who's likely to be dishing to him in the slot off that left half wall.
Yeah, that one-timer especially, when Bo was going in the power play, that ability to have a lefty shot that can easily one-time it is a huge threat, and it makes Pettersson's life easier because it doesn't feel like you're forcing the puck on the right-hand side. It makes Miller's life easier too, because now all of a sudden he's got the down low option, he's got his own option to shoot, he's got Pettersson on the right and the point, and probably the most highest percentage shot is in the bumper. And if you don't have that, you're kind of really limiting what you're able to do, or if you don't have that left hand shot. So if you get that high percentage shot going, teams have to respect it, which opens up Besser a little bit more, maybe gives them a little bit more room. And remember Miller along that left hand side, how many times he'd fake that pass and just go downhill and shoot himself? Like, we forget Miller's got that shot himself, that when you have that bumper threat, it just gives him a little bit more room to operate. So I think, in that game against Edmonton, there's one opportunity where you saw him get that opportunity and Skinner made the save. But there's one play off the faceoff where he kind of like just darted towards the middle of the ice. It was in motion. If you can get more face-off plays like that going as well, that's going to add another layer to this power play. It wasn't overall, we're not talking about goals that they scored. You're looking for hints the first time a power play plays together. There were certain things that Jake DeBrusque did to say, all right, I could see this working, coming to fruition at some point.
So Princess Erica, great question. Thanks for writing in, asking about the strong chemistry between Pettersson and DeBrusque. And then we get Bob at the other end of the spectrum, who asks, when am I allowed to worry about Petey's play? He looks like he's trying to conserve energy, coasting and posting up like he's Matt Sundin. Got to get those legs scampering. And Bob, here's what I'm going to say. It's the preseason. If we're seeing this in 2 weeks in game number 7, 8, 9, 10 of the regular season, then you can worry. But right now, it's the exhibition campaign. That's all we have to go off of. I would say that it looks like he's conserving energy because he probably is conserving energy, because why would you go all out in an exhibition game? So write back to us in a couple of weeks if you're still worried about Pettersson's play once we get into the regular season. And at that point, it's a fair conversation to have. But I don't want to read too much into anything that's happened in the preseason.
Well, okay, in that case, Edmonton's effort on Friday night wasn't exactly them moving their feet for the first half of that game either, right? Like, players are going to do that. Skilled players are going to do that. With Elias Pettersson, I thought the game on Friday night against Edmonton, he was moving his feet. It was his best effort in the preseason. Is it 100% regular season mode? No, it's not. You're ramping up. You're a veteran, and Elias Pettersson's a veteran now. You're getting there. you're going to show something. And I thought his neutral zone play, the way he was tracking back, the back pressure he was bringing was better than all of the previous games. The way that he had his head up and he was attacking through the neutral zone, you know, zone entries, much better than the previous game. So
I would go as far as to say much better than how he was playing at the end of last year, too, and it's still the preseason.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, the chemistry will come. They weren't maybe seeing, you know, Jake DeBrusk hasn't played that many games with Pettersson. Sprong was playing his first game on that line. That chemistry is going to come. But I think from a individual perspective, I don't worry about Pettersson in that regard. Now, if we're talking about game 15 and 20 and it's the same pace, we can have that conversation, Bob. But game six of the preseason, I'm not worried about that.
We got a couple of questions in here. One from Justin and East Van, and another one from at PD underscore 40 underscore on Twitter. It's basically the same question. Justin says, will Arshdeep Bains make the opening night roster? And at PD underscore 40 underscore
okay, no
says,
political, no
does
political
Bains
answers
make the
here.
Team?
No political answers here. We gotta jump on it. We're going to put on our prediction hat. We can't. I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that they're going to end up operating in LTI because of the fact that, as we talked about already, Pew Suter's wearing a non-contact jersey at practice here as we're watching at UBC on Saturday afternoon. Non-contact, to me, alludes to the fact that it might be a little bit longer than what we might have thought. He might not be ready for Wednesday. And if Suter's not ready for Wednesday, then they basically have to go into LTIR, which gives them the flexibility to keep Arshdeep Bains on the roster. So that's my take. I'm going to say he's going to make it.
For everything that you said and the fact that that game on Friday night was an impressive one. There's people, you know, Canucks fans, media, everybody was watching that game and saying, hey, if you didn't know Canucks hockey, who's this Bains kid, right? That's something that I look at to say you're peaking at the right time. You've elevated your game. And to be fair, he's been good since day one. And he got an earlier start because he was at Young Stars, but he's been able to ramp up and show that he's got that speed. I think based on merit and all the cap implications, 100% you're right. I think just based on the fact that if you're looking for somebody to jump in for Dakota Joshua or Pew Suter or potentially even Connor Garland, depending on what that situation looks like, you need some skill and you need guys that play Rick Tocchet's way. I'm saying yes, he's on the opening night roster.
So there we go. That is the official in the booth
stance. You heard it here.
And you can send your notes and make fun of us if we're wrong for next week's show.
That's wrong? What? Never.
I know, never. It has never happened before, will never happen again. Dalvir Vander on Twitter writes in and says, who's the first defenseman who will be called up from Abbotsford should there be some injuries? And I think the interesting part about this conversation is which defensemen are going to be in Abbotsford. At this moment, I would say probably Mark Friedman is the guy of the eight Canuck defensemen still on the roster that's most likely to go down. And assuming he goes through waivers and makes it down to Abbotsford, I put him at the top of that list. But let's take him out of the equation. Who's the next call-up for you on the Abbotsford blue line?
Well, the biggest question on the back end, injuries aside, is third pair, how well can you move the puck? And if that is something that they need to address, I'm expecting to hear Christian Willanen's music.
Yeah.
Because he is a puck-moving defenseman. He's a guy that that is a strong suit. So if you're looking for a different option, you're saying we need something different, you know, and I think Desharnais and Forbort will take some time. This is, you know, I talked to Vincent Desharnais yesterday, and he said Adam Foote had a great conversation with him just saying, hey, you're going to have some, we're trying to play a different way. You're trying to play quicker, faster. It's different from what you've done in the past. And there will be some good days. There will be some bad days. That's the reality of it. But this is going to be something that that pair will have to get used to. And if it doesn't happen or if there's a need on that third pair, I think Christian Willanen and his skill set to skate the puck out of trouble, to make passes, you know, and we saw also in Penticton as well, he was in those drills, he was playing pretty well executing them. I think that's the guy I look at.
And I'll give honorable mention to a couple of guys who I think had good training camps who might be in that conversation in the second half of the season. Elias Pettersson, obviously the defenseman, and Kirill Kudryavtsev, who really turned heads. Rick Tocchet spoke about him a lot as liking his play. If those guys have good years, take steps in their game, are playing a lot, are doing well in the second half of the year, I think there is a case to be made for one of those guys to come up as well, one of the younger defensemen to potentially make an NHL debut at some point this season. Okay, we got time for one more question. Jeffro writes in, is this Canucks team that's about to start the season better than the team that finished last year in Game 7, injured players included? He follows up and says, what up, guys? Hockey's back. And it is indeed starting Wednesday with the season opener. So we're including Joshua, we're including Demko, we're including Suter at this point, as we said, practicing with a non-contact jersey on Saturday. Are they better? Are they worse? Are they about the same? Where are you going to fall on that scale?
So once again, that's ending last season,
yes,
correct? Yes,
the roster that was available to them for game seven.
Including Zadorov, Lindholm, and all that. So I'm going to say about the same, because think about it this way. They made those acquisitions in December, January, and then at the trade deadline, and they added. For this team to be at that starting point with the deep forward group that they have, with, you know, a different-looking defense, and some would say it was a better defense last year with Ian Cole and Nikita Zadorov, I'm willing to hear that. But remember, this is a starting point. You know this management team in December and January is going to do something. That's the way that they operate. If this team is giving them a reason to believe, and they are a good team, and which what is what we expect, I would expect this team to add probably another defenseman as well. So from a forward group perspective, I think they're better than last year. From a defensive perspective, they've probably taken a little bit of a step back. Obviously, the big question is Thatcher Demko. If he's healthy, I'm even willing to say you're maybe a little bit better than last year. But that's the big question. So right now, I'm going to say as good, because we know that this team is going to play with structure. But if you can add something at the deadline batch, or even a couple of months before the deadline, we'll see what this team can do. But to me, they're about the same.
I'm going to say better, and here's why. I think the forward group is absolutely better, especially with the depth they've got on the wings. If we're assuming full health and you've got Joshua and Suter in the lineup, then you're talking about a likely fourth line at this point of Nils Höglander, Pew Suter, and Kiefer Sherwood. Like, that is
solid.
That is a very good line. So they've got added depth. They've got a high-end goal scorer like Jake DeBrusk in the mix to give Pedersen more help on his wings. Like, remember the guys that were playing there last year, Mikheyev and Kuzmenko at times. So the forward group is absolutely, definitively better. The only thing you could say is that right shot centerman down the middle and the guy like Lindholm that can play that role, that's something they might look to address as the season goes forward. I think you can definitively say the blue line is not as good. Nikita Zadorov's not here. Ian Cole's not here. And although Forbert and Desharnais bring the style of play that Tocchet likes, I would take Cole and Zadorov together
over
Forbert and Desharnais.
Puck movement as well, right?
Yeah.
Ian Cole, I thought, was underrated for that puck movement skills. And Nikita Zadorov can skate out of trouble. Prone to mistakes, but we saw what he could do in Vancouver last year.
And then goaltending, you have to say better too for me, assuming Demko's healthy, which
said
injured players included. So if we are including Demko in this, we're talking about on paper. They have Demko. They now have Shelovs, who emerged last year after that great playoff run. And I'd take Kevin Lankinen over Casey DeSmith too. So because I'm going to say the forward group is better and the goaltending is better, even if the defense has taken a bit of a step back, those two out of three factors are what makes the difference for me to say they're better now. And the exciting thing is they have the opportunity to get even better as we get into the season. And we know they'll make moves and look to tweak and complement this group and make moves ahead of the deadline.
Okay, we might disagree on the wording of it, but we've agreed that they haven't taken a step back. I love the question, though, because I think that's what this team will be measuring themselves against, too. If you took the step last year, what can you do this year? Can you repeat, or can you, you know, play with confidence this year? And you shuffle people in and out, but do you still have that staying power? Do you still have that same team identity? And they're banking on that they do. I'll give you a funny story real quick here. I was talking to Desharnais yesterday, and I asked him about the room. And I said, you know, what's special about this room? We heard from Zadorov and Lindholm last year, and he said, everybody just welcomes you. He's like, so much so that when I got to town, Tyler Myers helped me pick my apartment, and Dakota Joshua helped me get a car. So I'm just imagining these guys hanging out together and Tyler Myers sitting over a laptop helping him pick an apartment. So that tells you the camaraderie that they have within this group. And that speaks to, it's more than just skill. It's a belief and a brotherhood where, hey, you're a part of our crew now. We battled you last year, but that's all right. You're one of us now. Let's get this thing going. And that's the vibe around this team, Batch.
And I think you get that from Kiefer Sherwood, too, who after the game on Friday is talking about they don't like us and we don't like them with the Oilers when he wasn't even here for that playoff series last year. So it's going to be an awful lot of fun. Again, the regular season starts Wednesday against the Flames, 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6 right here on Sportsnet 650. That does it for this week's edition of In the Booth. Again, you can always send your questions into us at Batch Hockey, at Randeep Janda on Twitter. You have been listening to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650.